Welcome to 74 Escapes new podcast series, Breaking Bread with Vera Lulu. I'm Vera, and I will take you on a gastronomic journey to explore food as an expression of cultural identity. I'll be hosting chefs and industry professionals from all over the world to discuss everything about this art form that really nourishes our souls. Let's start. On this episode of Breaking Bread with Vera Lulu, I have the pleasure of speaking with my dear friend, chef, poet, and philosopher Bruno Verjoux. Bruno is a chef and owner of Michelin star table by Bruno Verjoux in Paris. Self-proclaimed wild child who grew up in the nature near Lyon, who in early age was bathed in the wilderness. At the age of eight, he cultivated his family garden and foraged forests and rivers in search of herbs, mushrooms, and fish. His interests are far and wide, from fascination with medicine to literature to food writing for Le Foodien, Omnivore, and Au Quotidien. And today I'm so honored to welcome my friend Bruno Verjoux. Chef, how are you today?
Hello, I'm fine. happy seeing you.
I'm happy to see you too. It's been a long time. Chef, so you said, and I quote, "The way we eat decides the world we live in." Speak, if you would, about this philosophy and how it's informed your trajectory as cook and restaurateur.
You know, you said, I said that maybe, you know, this sentence was about 8 years ago, and if you just look at the act at the now situation, it's something so important, because I do believe that, sorry for that, because it's maybe not too cool to your American citizen, but COVID is really the illness of the malbouffe, of the bad eating, you know, and that we now can show that the people that they eat, you know, all this kind of agro industry food and those, you know, all the, what we call junk food, they really treated so bad their body that they can be very, very affected by any illness, and by the way, by the COVID. And so the way we spend money to the good people, I mean, the people that they do something right, and I mean, in the good sense for the planet, in terms of, I don't know, making growing vegetables or making growing chickens or fishing well, beautiful things on a very clean and nice spot on ocean, or, you know, all these kind of things. And if you feed your body with that, you're for sure in a better shape, in a better vibration, in a better energy. And so that doesn't mean that you will never had any illness, but that means that you're more, you know, resilient to such of things coming from a world that doesn't go on the, you know, on the good way. And so this is what I really deeply do believe. And that was the reason why I create Table. That was to say, hey, please give the money to the right people, feed yourself with very, you know, bio and more than bio, organic and white culture things. And for sure, you will belong, you will be the one of the, let's say, you will.
But at the same time, I still feel like in New York, especially, a lot of people here actually do go to the markets, and more people in New York, rather than the whole US, do know about seasonality. So, yeah. It's changing, but it's still really, really behind after Europe, I think. You have also said that food is part of me since childhood. You grew up near Lyon, and you were a wild child by your own admission. So what else did your upbringing teach you about your craft?
Yeah, it's difficult to say, because, you know, when you are very... early in the Chinese, you don't, for sure, you have a lot of impression, you get many information, and most of them you don't, you just keep it inside you. And one day, I don't know, one day, after a lot of time passing, and there is some who reappear, you know, this is like if you had a beautiful stone, a bit rough, and you put in the water, and after, I don't know, years and years of water flowing, there is things coming out again. There was inside, but cannot show. And after that, this friction to the world, to your life, there is things coming back. And maybe that was a very important part of my life, when I was a child, and I was going in the river to catching a trout fish by hand, or some crayfish, or catching frogs, because we love frogs in France, so I was catching frogs too, or rabbits, or whatever, or fruit, or making some radish, carrots, or salad, you know. And then you absolutely forget that, you know, you don't care, it's okay. But one day, this come back to you, and maybe you have the taste of what the thing should taste. So that is, in my actual job, is very, very efficient, you know, because when I eat something, I know somewhere how it have to taste and why it's good, why it's not good. And so it's very helpful, you know.
Yes. And as I understand, you had ambitions to study medicine and you headed to California. Is that
that's right. And then I moved to China because I started a business there, and I spent 18 years in China. You know, that was not only in China, I mean, but I was mainly, my business was mainly in China. That was very interesting. And by the way, in China, I learned a lot about eating, because these people, they are crazy about food, fresh food. And there is such an ancient knowledge for everything. And what is very interesting nowadays is that, you know, the feeding people in China mainland is something have to go with medicine, because they know that depend of the shape you're going to be. Because it's like, you know, in the old times, we were very, very aware of the quality of the food, because that disc sometimes can kill people if it's not very well done, or if it's too old, or if it's rotten, or whatever. And so in China, they keep this, and they have an incredible knowledge about the way to cook or uncook or whatever. And I think by eating that, I learned a lot too. And now this Chinese part of me is very, very important in the way I create my dishes. For example, to be very specific, I do believe that, okay, when I create a dish, there is a sort of a storytelling, there is a narration, and there is many stories in the plate, but there is some that concern the bottom part of your body, that means the what we call the stomach brain, okay, that's go down, and there is some that they have to go up to go to your limbic brain, and for me it's very important. So it's a sort of yin and yang things, and it's a holistic way to understand how feeling people, to give them a lot of joy, a lot of happiness, a lot of memory or remembering things, and at the same time to give them good element and good energy to their body to be very efficient too. So, you know, it's interesting.
Wow, I admire your approach on how you approach and create the dish.
Yeah.
I love it. Beautiful.
So, yeah, I don't have any secret for you.
I actually find Chinese food extremely complex and very, very, very difficult. It's very complex, complex cuisine, don't you find?
Yeah, it's a very complex cuisine, and it's very complex people, because they have an incredible knowledge. Years after a thousand years after a thousand years, they have incredible ingredients too, and they are really, really taking care of the quality of the ingredients most of the time. And at the same time, they understand so well what food should be, even, you know, high-end food. And to tell you the truth, I don't know if you know this girl, which is an incredible girl, so clever in the food business, which is Agnes Chi. You know, she's a Hong Kong journalist, food critic and food journalist, and she's the girl, the most clever girl I never met about food. And she teach me so much about that, the way that she have the perception of dishes, of the way the things are done, cooking or not, or whatever. And so she helped me a lot in this field.
I would love
you know?
To make a research.
Yeah, you have to meet her one day. She's very incredible, incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the mid 1980s, you have, as you described, a revolution. You meet Alain Passard. So tell me, talk about your experience with him.
Yeah, the first meeting was like a joke because we have a common friend, and he was very proud to introduce me to Alain Passard. And to tell you the truth, that was the first time I had a lunch at Arpège restaurant. And I don't know, when we met, that was maybe at the middle of the lunch, that Alain show on the main room. And I don't know, if we just have at the first sight, you know, we decided to joke and to say the friend, and we pretend to be old friends, and we never met. But we just pretended, And so my friend was a bit upset because he said, "Oh, why you don't told me that you're good friend and you know each other?" I was so happy to introduce her. I said, "Oh, we cannot say anything, but you know, blah blah blah." But I to tell you, that was the first time I met Alain. So that was on this joke, and we. This is very, you know, very interesting because that showed that how close we feel when we met for the first time. We had. For sure, he was a professional. I was just somebody eating in his restaurant. But we had the same concern about vegetables, the same lubie about these kind of things, how we can do with that. Because I was a cook in my home for my kids, for my friends. And I was very, very intense with people making growing veggies or fishing or you know, taking care of chicken, of lamb or whatever. So that was my main concern out of my business. That was my passe-temps, you know. I was really obsessed with that, going to market, going to visit people. And so we had so much to share. And so I do remember that the first lunch, maybe we arrived at 12:30 and I went out of the restaurant at 2:00 in the morning. So we have lunch, dinner, and we can even not separate, you know. And that was the beginning of I don't know now, it's a lot of time, maybe more than 25 years of really incredible close friendship. And when I started my restaurant 7 years ago, I talked with Alain a lot, and that was the only guy, you know, I know so many chefs, but that was the only chef who texts me every day to say, "Bruno, don't give up. I know it's so hard. I know it's so difficult for you. Don't give up. Don't give up." And he was really pushing me always and giving me good advice. And you know, he was really like a brother. And by the way, we call each other frero, which means like, you know, you can say what, bro in the in a modern slang, let's say. But we say in France, we say frero, which is more, you know, more close, maybe.
I know, I'm very fortunate to actually go tweet at his
garden.
Garden, yes. Yeah. So it was quite a fun experience. I think it must have been a 7-hour lunch too. So it was, and he's
I did not spend the 7 hours because I had to leave at 5:30 because I have to went back to my restaurant in Paris because it was open on Saturday evening. But when I quit was, yeah, maybe I think 5:30. And that was only the first service of meat. So I mean that, yes, you start at noon and you're just done at 9 p.m. or something, you know. But Alain is so happy there because it's like, you know, it's a show. It's a show. He's doing things everywhere. And, yeah.
He must have 20, 30 guests and people. And ISD was there. It was such a fabulous day. I still think of it. With such, you know, joy, and it was 3 years ago that I went.
Yeah, and you see, he's so happy. He's totally freestyle with the vegetables and everything, and giving love and food for people, which is our concern. You know, I think we give more love than food. We have this incredible, you know, feeling that. Okay, you have to be a part of something bigger, and we are here to share something incredible, that's the point. Yeah.
Yes, and it shows in your dishes.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so. Yeah, this is what. Yeah.
Bruno, so much like we're doing today, speak of cultivating a taste for good things through writing and broadcasting in French culture. You used to do podcasts. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You still do them.
Yeah, I was doing. What are you talking about? My video during the COVID? I mean, or no, long time ago.
I think a long time ago.
Oh yeah, I was doing podcast because no. Did you mean when I was at Radio France, at France Culture, mm-hmm. the National Cultural Radio? Yeah. no, I'm not doing that anymore. Because, you know, that was at this period of time, I spent 4 years and a half doing that, having a show every Sunday with my friend Alain Kruger. We create the show together. And that was this show we make me decide to move on, to move to open a restaurant. That was my, you know, crazy part, because I was really absolutely with no conscience of what it is having a restaurant. I was just thinking, oh my God, it's so cool cooking for people, and I will be so happy. But at the same time, I forget the mass part of the things that I had to run a restaurant to. I mean, people, and you know, so it's, yeah. And now, no, I don't have time for that. I do some video on my Instagram. I was doing that during the COVID time. And that was a big, big thing, because this brings me so many people to the restaurant, and that's make the people coming very close to me. And I think maybe I was doing something very interesting, which is that, you know, like a radio, but by video, because most of the time when you do video, you know, people are looking at you because you are doing something. So they are just watching. Okay. They are watching somebody. There is a lot of people watching somebody doing one thing. In my video, I think there is only one people watching somebody talking to these people, and multiplied by the number of the connection. But it's one-to-one, and it's really incredible in terms of efficiency.
Yes, I absolutely love your videos.
And you know, because I talk to you, my dear, you know, and only you, no, not everybody. And this is what you feel, and this is what I do, because it's very important, you know. It's not broadcasting, it's really narrowcasting, only one person to one, yeah.
Bruno, I've seen your story, was it yesterday with the pigeon, but didn't you, you invented the technique to prepare pigeons with a scissors at the speed of light. Tell me about this.
What do you want to know, my recipe? First of all, this is incredible pigeon, and you know, there is something fun, because this pigeon come from La Guerche de Bretagne, and La Guerche de Bretagne, this is the tiny village where Alain Passat was born, and there is no reason for that, but there is a guy named Joël Poirier who make this pigeon growing. And this is the most incredible pigeon I never had, you know. It's incredible quality, incredible softness, taste. They are tasty but not too strong, just incredible. So we try to treat them well, and so first of all we cook them in a stove, you know, this big cocotte, and inside we put some hay, and I have also but I don't know the English name for that, which is tilleul, you know, it's a flowers on a tree that you do some infusion with. It tastes a little like honey and a little like a orange blossom on the same time. Maybe teal or something, I don't know. Okay, we have to check. I don't know. But by the way, it's not so important. And so we just cook a little bit like this, maybe 10 minutes inside the cocotte, closed, because that makes the fat melt a little bit, and the fat get back the aroma of the hay and the teal. And then we just roast it a little bit, and then we tie them like a shibari, you know, session, the pigeon, and we put a lake on it like the Chinese style. To tell you the truth, I was doing that with game. We had some duck, canard colvert, during the game period. And I decided to do like in a Chinese way, with the lake of mole, which is, you know, chili, chocolate, but also some
flavor.
Yeah, and hibiscus too, and some chicken juice. A nice reduction, so it's going very thick with the heat, and then it's make a glaze, a beautiful glaze, like a very expensive shoes looking, you know. Very glazy. And I was doing that for the duck. One day we had a very important Italian chef at the restaurant, and the people that the serve him, they promised that, oh, the chef gonna cook a duck, incredible glazed duck for you. And then when they came back, but they told me. And when they came back to me, there was no duck anymore, because I don't know, we have 12 and we don't have any left. And I say, okay, let's do a pigeon like a duck. And by the way, it's much more better than a duck because the game dogs are a bit dry and not too fatty and blah, blah. But the pigeon, they are so crazy. So this way, so I keep the recipe. I say, okay, now I don't do duck this way. I will do only the pigeon like a duck, like a glazed duck. You know, that this is the recipe.
I personally love game so much. I mean, my favorite is squab. Partridge. And I always question myself, how come, I mean, I grew up in Europe, but how come US does not have appreciation for it? I see it sometimes on the menu in the restaurants, but people here don't, they don't seem to love it. Why do you think this is?
I don't know, because I think it's difficult. Most of the time, you know, the chef point of view with that is doing things very, you know, very intense in terms of taste, very intense in terms of juice, very intense in terms of cooking and preparation, and by the way, and even maturation. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not very familiar with that. I prefer to treat it in a very quiet way. Not too intense, very soft, very nice, I can understand that, because if I go to a restaurant, sometimes I'm not very close to the way they prepare gaming, and I do prefer not choosing that than being to something too strong for me or too intense. I like softness, you know. I'm a soft boy.
You're a soft boy. Bruno, what do you think is the greatest challenge to run a restaurant? What do you find the most?
To be, for sure, to be consistent. Yeah, this is the biggest challenge, being consistent on each plate, you know. And when you do a lot, as this time, this period of time, because we really do a lot, we do maybe 65 to 70 guests a day. They have to be guests, not customers. It's a very important point. So we have to really take care to give them a lot of love, a lot of attention, a lot of understanding what are their expectations, who they are, how they think, what do they like, and being, you know, a little in advance in their request, to be very close of them. So it's a lot of attention. So you're very tired by the end of the day, because it takes so much from you, and on the same time managing your staff to be consistent, I mean, on the kitchen side and on the service side and on the wine side. So it's difficult, very, very difficult, and more you're exhausted, more it's difficult. And but there is no way, there is no reason, everybody have to be at the top of the top. It's like running, you know, on the edge of a mountain. You cannot stop, and you cannot, sorry?
It's mental work as well. It's not just physical, because it's...
Yeah. It's like running, you know, on the crest, and but you cannot stop, because if you stop, you fall down, and you cannot fall down. But you have to run at the top, and you cannot rest. It's very difficult being consistent. With a lot of love sharing, with a lot of attention, and with the perfect cooking of everything, perfect looking of the plates, everything is difficult.
You know, when I used to live in Japan, I feel like most of the chefs, if not all, have the same philosophy as you. I think it's approach that comes from Japan, China, where our customer is not a customer, but it's a guest.
For sure. I mean, there is many restaurants where you don't care. You just want to be a customer. You don't care. You know what I mean. But when you come to a restaurant like mine in Tab, no way. You're here for to sharing an incredible experience that makes the place. You cannot get any this kind of experience in any other places. You know, it's very special, very specific. And if you want to have it, you have to come to Tab. And if you come to Tab, you want to have it. So we have, you know, we have to deliver. No way not delivering it.
You know, when I spent a few months staging with Chef Zayo Hasegawa at Den, it was incredible to see that every customer, they knew every single customer. They had a track which dates they were there, what they had eaten last, their birthdays. If the customer came months later, we would give a birthday card. Every time we would walk out the guests out of the restaurant, we would bow and say thank you, wave, and it was such a beautiful experience. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah. For sure, it's very important. No, and to notice if the people they like to have a glass of water when they just come in, and if it's sparkling or not or whatever, it's very important, very important. But on the same time, the process cannot be the solution. We need process, but we need also to be, you know, very receptive to the customers, the mood, the way they move, the way they want the things to be done, if they want to know a lot, or if you have to be very quiet with them, and sometimes, you know, mood change for people, or because they are not with the same guest at the table, the behavior is a bit different. So you really have to be really, really, really like a sponge, you know, to understand immediately the information and to give it back. Yeah. So process is not the only solution. I know that your people love process. We are kids for process, but we have some, you know, we try to be more close to make the things too. Yeah. I'm kidding you.
Having had a pleasure to eat at your restaurant, I can testify you make the best petit verre.
I do remember that.
First of all, what is the key to a great petit verre? And second, did it take you many, what was the process of creating it and perfecting it? Did it take you years and trials and errors, or to perfect it to such a way? Tell me.
Oh, I hope that you have maybe 10 more hours for interviewing me, because it's a very complex question, and PTVA is a very complex matter. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not the king of the PTVA. I try to do it my best, but you know, this is the absolute chef d'oeuvre of the haute cuisine française. PTVA come from something very interesting, because it's come maybe from people like Vatel, who were mostly a pastry chef, and they move to the salty part. And at the same time, they have some architecture pretension. That was the period of this time that they prepare food as a building, you know, like a Versailles. And at the same time, they have the same preoccupation as the pastry chef in terms of a very pinpointed every element, every grams or everything, time of cooking, and blah, 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 blah. That means that they do really absolutely chef d'oeuvre. And there is some huge chef in Paris that they are doing that very, very well. And as far as I'm concerned, I cannot do that, because I'm mostly an autodidact, so I can bring my brain to the story. But I'm not a MOF, Meilleur Ouvrier de France, who spent 20 years learning how to buy the PTV or whatever. So what I was interested in the PTV, except of the old story and bringing back to, let's say, to reality, to our period of times, is that for me, it's an interesting matter, because you cook the things inside something, which is all the pâte feuilletée, or the other part I do, but that means it's cooked inside, like like if it's steam. And I do remember that I used to read in books that in the paleolithic times, they used to do something which is for sure not PTVA, but they cook it the same way, because they make a big hole, you know, in the glaze, and they put some stones and a lot of wood. And then they make a very big fire, and then they put some fresh leaves, and they put the things that they have to cook in the more intense way close to the stones. And then they do like a chateau of things, you know, and they usually finish with fish, with crab, with shells, with small things that they have to bring the salt or bring some taste to the things, and then they close it and they let it over the night. And when I was thinking about my TV, I say we have to work the same way as the paleolithic things because it could be interesting. And so I do my own building, you know, by putting the foie gras on the top, because this foie gras will bring the fat to everything. And then I put some veggies things, could be most of the time cabbage or, you know, or some leaves that we have here. And then I do with, I don't know, could be poultry, pheasant or pigeon or goose or you know, any kind of meat that we prepare it. We cook a little bit. And then we do some mushroom, eggplant, the legs of the volatile, and then we close that all. And that's been during the time of cooking, because the heat comes from the upper part of the oven, that makes the thing going like that very slowly, and bringing the every taste, every fat, every taste to the mushroom part and eggplant part. We keep it, you know. And so that was the way I do my pitivier. And I use not the pâte feuilletée, because for me it's a bit too fatty. And but I use a pâte from the old time that we call petit pâté de Pézenas, which is done about half of butter, half of fat of a chicken or duck, half of wheat. We use old species of wheat, and a half of pomme de terre, of potatoes. And so it's very interesting, because it's remained very crunchy, but inside it takes also the aroma of everything.
Sounds like poetry to me.
No, it's, yeah, and you know, that was really my brain part was really in the story, to try to get to figure out what is the story of a pitivier, except that you have to do a cheddar in terms of looking. And after that, it takes me, after I get the point, you know, so it was easy to do, but I spend a lot of times, there was a phone call, and that it takes me a lot of time, maybe 6 months practicing to make it beautiful, because it has to be beautiful. So you have to practice a lot, practice and practice, to find the solution to make everything very stable, very beautiful, and doing your little carving things on it, and then you use the saffron and egg yolk to make the beautiful gold color after it's cooked, and then we put the juice and some honey on it to make it more shiny and more beautiful once again. And after that, it's done. You just put some white salad, a little of acidity, and you have the perfect dish. Rich, not fatty, but rich, intense, of elegant aroma, and on the same time, very fresh, by the way, because a lot of veggies part inside.
What a thing to master. Maybe one day a little bit. I know that your philosophy is you don't really order specific products from the producer, but you let the producer to ensure the best product at the best time and the quantity available.
Yeah, this is correct. Yeah. I think this is the best way, you know, because when you want to take care of the planet and taking care of the people of the ecosystem economy, bioeconomy of everything, you cannot push people to say, these people to say, okay, I need, I don't know, 20 kilo of tomatoes, 10 kilo of beans, blah, 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 blah. No, you cannot do that, because this will make them change a little bit the way that they process. And so that will affect for sure the ecosystem and the sustainability of their business. So I always work this way with everybody, which is very simple for me to say, you send me what you have in the quantity you have available on the time you just believe it's perfect. And then that's mean that daily we get some deliveries. And with that, I create daily new dishes or new menu or whatever. And I have my palette, I have my universe, but after that we cook. And it's very important also for the staff, because that's meant the people going out of the routine. They have to disrupt what they know, and they have to, you know, they have to move out of the comfort zone, because you cannot replicate, duplicate always the same things, because every day you have the turbo, you have the crayfish, you have the chicken and everything. No, you have to try to figure out what you get, making your brain very aware of what you get and thinking about that, talking all together to say, okay, we're gonna do that. How we don't, blah blah blah, and then that's make the people more creative and more, you know, intense of the way they cook and they take care of the guest.
Absolutely, it's everything I stand against is a mass production.
It's a consequence of my choices, but it's a very efficient consequence, because that make the people to be very very creative. And really doing the things à la minute and thinking why they are doing the things this way and not just duplicate or replicate.
You know, we have in common, I know that you love to watch people eat. And I noticed that I had this fascination with watching people eat since I was really, really young. And it always gave me so much pleasure. And I think, I just think it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, because you know, yes, I'm like you. I like to watch. No, you know, it's very important watching people eating, for sure, because it makes me happy. That's the reason why I cook. I love feeding people, for sure. But on the same time, this gives you so much information of the way you can cook for people. When you do a makase menu, it's very important to see. You do a try, you know, you send a plate to somebody because you do believe that it could be okay, and you just look how the way they get it, if they feel like wow, or they are like it or blah blah blah, and then you can decide what you do. Even if you do, you know, the same dishes for all the table, they are not the same dishes because they are really dedicated to each people. So in my restaurant, that, you know, we can see everybody's eating because there is no frontier between the kitchen part and the room part. And so this teach me a lot. And for example, last year I had to cook in Milano at Identità e Golosi, and the kitchen was not close to the room, and I was like, if I was blind, you know, that was very, very weird experience for me, because no way to get any feedback from people except talking to the waiters who say, "Baba," but it's don't bring you anything, you know, don't bring you anything, even if it's not reliable, but don't bring you back something. And so it was very interesting.
Bruno, how has COVID impacted your restaurant? How are things going for table right now?
As you know, we've been closed to, let's say, what, two months and a half. But I was very proactive on the media. I was very proactive in my restaurant because I used to cook for the people taking care in the hospital. I do it for free. I buy good ingredients, the same as the one I use for table, because I had the feeling that I have to support all my supplier, because if not, they're gonna disappear, because nobody buy them anymore. And so most of these people, they have two solutions to sell their production: is the market, they were closed, and restaurant, they were closed. So I say, okay, what I'm gonna do? I just close my eyes and I say, okay, maybe there is some, they will be still there when we reopen, or I do something. So I decided to buy them some ingredients to cook for hospital first, and then I was thinking, okay, I should do à emporter, you know, so a tab to go, let's say. But on the same time, I wanted the people to commit themselves cooking. So I just create recipes that they can do very easily home. Some it's already done, some they have to do, they have to cook, but in a very simple way and very easy way, that, and with 100% of success, you know, at the key. And and so that was interesting, and I sell a lot. I buy a lot from my suppliers, and so that's bring me some money to the restaurant to pay the rent and some bills. And by the way, you know, I had some of my people, because they will be, you know, all spreading out France, and some of them come back, some of them doesn't want to come back, but after some time they come back because they know that we were running things at TAB. So that brings everybody back to the family, the TAB family, working together. And so when we had to reopen on June 2nd, everybody was ready. All my little farmers, fishermen, and everybody was so happy that I helped them a lot. So they sent me incredible things. And so we start very strongly. We don't have any problems in terms of quality or whatever with TAB, because we were maybe not the first day, but on the second day, we were almost at the top when we closed the restaurant. So that was very, let's say, that was clever and effective and very efficient for TAB. And to tell you the truth, June was one of, that was, in terms of incomes, the best ever months of the table since 7 years.
Wow, this is really wonderful.
That was crazy, and I do believe that July is going to be about the same. The main problem we have now is that we cannot figure out what's going to be after holidays, September, October, November, December, because for sure there will be no tourists, there will be nobody like that. So will the French people still back to restaurants and being very, very sharing a lot with us? I don't know.
Well, I can for sure say that once I am back allowed in France, I'll be the first to come.
Thank you.
And you know, wrap, Chef, it was so, so lovely to see you and catch up. And it was, thank you for your time and to be breaking bread with me. And I so hope we can share a glass of Calvados very soon.
And I will do the special PTVA for you, for sure. And so many new things. You will be so happy. Thank you so much for holding me in your show. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
and you all take care.